Chapter 9, India. At home, I had done my best to try to search out jiu-jitsu academies in the most unlikely places. It was difficult to do online, but I managed to find a very simple website from India with sparse information about a gym and thought it would really be a different place to travel for training. I sent them an email and got a short answer back that I was welcome and just needed to let them know when I would land. That was it. It was a long shot, but I booked a ticket from Turkey to Mumbai and sent them my itinerary. I'd had lots of thoughts about how it would be to train with people there. The only thing I had seen was a group photo of some mean-looking Indian dudes in an old gym. Now I was actually going there, and there was no way back. At the passport control, the immigration officer was looking thoroughly at the little visa sticker I had gotten from the Indian embassy back home. Never really knowing what else to write, I had written sports coach as profession. A few years earlier, I was entering the US on a different trip. The immigration officer was a very serious-looking American guy in uniform. "What kind of sports is it you're coaching?" he asked me as he checked my arrival form. "It's something similar to wrestling or judo," I replied, as I usually do, not feeling like explaining about Brazilian jiu-jitsu to people who don't train themselves. "I will ask you once more," he said with no sign of facial expression. "What kind of sports are you coaching?" "It's called Brazilian jiu-jitsu, sir." He paused for a few seconds, flipping through my passport. "Please look to the right." I didn't know why he wanted me to do that, but he seemed so serious that I thought it would be the best to do just whatever he asked me. "And to the left?" There was a pause again. "Cauliflowers are looking good. BJ Penn or GSP? "BJ Penn, sir." He handed me the passport back with a grin. "Welcome to the United States. Enjoy your stay." It was my first long overnight flight with a time difference. My brain was confused as I woke up in the afternoon in a little bedroom in the middle of Mumbai. Strange smells and sounds were coming from behind the white curtains that were moving gently in the wind. A woman I didn't know came in with a cup of tea. She told me that someone had come to pick me up and was waiting for me downstairs. And there I suddenly was, hardly awake, on the back of a motorcycle in India, driving on a dirt road through a small market filled with people, animals, children, and vehicles. I felt like I had been teleported from the dark, cold, and snowy Istanbul directly to the back of the motorcycle in the burning hot Indian sun, as if all the traveling and sleep in between had not existed. People were, on average, about an hour late for the class I was teaching. It was a different culture than at home, where I would be annoyed at someone being 10 minutes late for my class and miss out on the warm-up drills. In some way, I enjoyed that people didn't seem to be in a hurry with anything, and with the temperature that day, there was no need to warm up anyways. Alan and Jitendra, the two coaches, introduced me to everyone. It was a very mixed group of guys, both age and size-wise. I had no idea as to what level they were or what to teach. After some body mechanic drills for warm-up, I had them roll to see what they could do. Alan seemed like he had a pretty good game, and I spotted a few others around the mat that had some skills. They were still beginners, and it was obvious that they lacked some solid fundamentals to build their game on, so I taught a class on holding the mount position. My knee was still somewhat hurting, but I had run out of patience and had to go a few rounds. It seemed like the guys were all on a level where I could control the pace of the roll and not jeopardize my knee with any surprise moves from my partner that I did not see coming. It was such a pleasure to roll again, and the knee held up fine. Alan was talented, but he obviously lacked higher level guys to roll with on a regular basis. I iced up my knee after class and crossed my fingers that I hadn't done any additional damage to it that day. There were 6 or 7 people from the gym going out for dinner that evening, and we parked the car outside a building with a few restaurants inside. Tons of motorbikes were parked around us, and hundreds of people were running around the streets in and out between the cars with drivers trying to find parking lots. It was hectic and noisy. Walking up the stairs to the restaurant, the atmosphere completely changed. It was warm, people were chatting at tables, the light was dimmed, and there was a wonderful smell of spices and herbs in the air. The food was as good as I could imagine. Even though it was my first day in India, I almost felt sad because I knew I would have to leave that food less than a week later. "I don't like the company of that animal," Masvir said when he was offered a goat curry. He was a huge guy who had grown up in Sweden and now lived in India. He had an impressive beard, a gold chain around his neck, and lots of tattoos, including a machine gun on one of his arms. He looked like a hardcore gangster, but when he opened his mouth, I couldn't stop laughing. His razor-sharp Scandinavian sarcasm was completely out of place in India, but right up my street. It was difficult to find rest in the warm bedroom with all the impressions, not to mention jet lag. I'd only been to 5 countries so far, but still my head was exploding with the thoughts of everything I had experienced. Falling asleep was really going to take some practice. After working out in the morning with giant Indian bodybuilders and going for a swim in a pool, Alan and I went to his apartment to wait a few hours before we had to wait for Nashik, another city roughly 4 hours out of Mumbai. We took the elevator to the 9th floor, where he lived with 2 others. A guy who Alan introduced as his brother was sitting in the sofa watching a movie on a big screen TV with the volume turned up really loud. I was tired from working out all morning and sat down in a comfortable chair by the window. Looking out, I could see what seemed like an endless dust-colored city. Construction workers were sitting on scaffolding outside a building, having a break. It was put together by what looked to be bamboo sticks and rope. They were at least as high up as I was on the 9th floor, sitting there with no safety harness on a wobbly wooden scaffold. Alan was about to take a nap and had put out a mattress for me as well. Thinking about the long drive to Nashik in the evening and the training the next day, I decided it would be a good idea to get a little rest. I lay down on a thin mattress by the window on the hard tile floor in Alan's room. I asked him about his family and he told me his story. When he was a young wrestler, all he dreamed about was to become a fighter. His parents had other plans with him and wanted him to marry and get an education. They ended up presenting him with an ultimatum. If he chose to pursue a career as a fighter, they would not accept him as their son anymore. So he left. He had nowhere to go until his coach Daniel took him in as one of his own. Since then, they had been living together for 16 years in Nashik. In the weekdays, he went to Mumbai to teach and stay in the apartment. He had found a new family that accepted him. I don't share blood with those people in my life, but I consider them to be my real family, he said. The whole thing was hard for me to grasp. I was coming from a privileged world where I could basically pick and choose whatever I wanted in life and not having to sacrifice much for it. Alan had given up everything to follow his dream. I was amazed by his determination, especially living in a country with so little opportunities to become a professional fighter. With a gentle and peaceful aura and always a smile on his face, he didn't look anything like a fighter on the outside. If I didn't know it, I would never have guessed that he had given up his biological family for a career of training. I lay there in silence, thinking about what he had just told me. There had been a pause in the conversation for a while, and Alan had fallen asleep. He was snoring. A pleasant breeze from the window touched my face gently. The bus from the dusty city, 9 floors below, seemed so distant. My eyes got heavy, and I felt like there was no other place in the world I could be more comfortable or relaxed at that very moment than right there on a thin mattress in a Mumbai apartment. We woke up late in the afternoon when Jitendra came to pick us up. We were filling up the car before driving to Nashik. I had been looking forward to see some of the countryside, but it became dark early, so I missed it. The guys were telling jokes in the car all the way. I was really tired and didn't say much, but it felt nice to be with them. They spoke a strange mix of some local Indian language and English with a heavy Indian accent. I understood most of it, although sometimes I really had to concentrate. During a stop at a gas station, Jitendra was telling me a joke where the crucial punchline word was rubber, and he had to repeat it to me about 10 times before I understood it through all the rolling R's. At that point, the joke was kind of dead. The traffic was insane. People were overtaking like they were suicidal. Apparently, a driver's license only costs a few dollars to get. A few bucks more and you can skip the test, Jitendra told me as everybody laughed. I wished I had time to go and get an Indian driver's license. With the price of a driver's license and cars in Denmark, I hadn't gotten one yet. Having an official Indian driver's license with a photo and everything would be the coolest ID I could possibly have for getting into nightclubs and picking up packages at the post office. Nashik was a small city about 4 hours outside of Mumbai. Small cities in India hold the population of half an average Scandinavian country, this one over 2 million people. It was so spread out that it didn't feel like a big city, but just like everywhere else I'd been in India, it was packed with people. We arrived late in the evening at Daniel's house, a former kickboxing champion that had now created MMA gyms in both Mumbai and Nashik, organizing competition and managing fighters from around the country. Alan was his most talented and successful student. It was a big house, and I had a whole room almost to myself, only sharing it with a handful of mosquitoes. I hadn't given malaria much of a thought on the trip so far, but it was hard not to think about it just a little bit at that point. I had decided not to take the expensive pills to prevent it, so I was completely vulnerable to being infected. The large fan in the ceiling sounded like an old propeller airplane. I put in my earplugs and covered my head with the blanket. It was quiet. I couldn't hear the fan, and the mosquitoes couldn't get to me. A strategy game on my phone diverted my thoughts from all the stuff going on in my head about how the rest of the trip would unfold. 5 hours later, I was waking up and told that we were going to the gym. I couldn't believe it. I needed at least double that to recover from all the traveling and training. While the Indians never seemed to hurry with anything, they were suddenly in a hurry to get to the gym early in the morning. I felt so tired when we got there. It was on the first floor of a building on a busy road in the city. Posters of the Indian fighters were plastered all over the walls, and the facilities were nicer than I had expected when I sat at home a few months earlier trying to imagine how training in India would be. Alan was teaching an early class, but I couldn't keep my eyes open. Daniel asked if I wanted to take a nap in the office. I saw it more as an extension of my night's sleep than a nap. He had a thin cotton mattress I laid down on the tile floor of the small office. I fell asleep immediately. All the noise from the street outside made me dream that I was lying on the back seat of a taxi driving around town because it was a much cheaper place to sleep than in a hotel room. A lot of people had showed up for my class in the evening, and I was feeling like I could go lots of rounds of sparring. My knee felt pretty good, and I went a few rounds with some very skilled guys, both big and small. I considered giving some of them blue belts, but despite having trained very hard, they had only been going at it for about a year and a half without real instruction. They definitely had the level, but they also planned to go competing in the future, so I thought it would be better to wait and accumulate a bit of experience as white belts first. Ellen had a beautiful classic motorbike that we drove home on. It was similar to the one I had been picked up with on the first morning in Mumbai. It was a long drive back to the house from the gym, but I enjoyed every second of it. It was late in the evening and the streetlight was sparse, as in non-existent. The traffic and amount of people in the streets was much less intense at that point, and I could just lean back and enjoy the ride. Ellen drove at a nice slow pace. There was no hurry. The air was hot and dry. All I could hear was the smooth sound of the engine, the little clicks when the gears would change with perfect timing, and the songs of the cicadas coming from the bush around the dusty streets. We drove past one area after another, with small, simple houses built out of whatever people had been able to find. Occasionally, light would come up from the cracks in the walls and hit the street in front of us. The smell of steamed rice was in the air. I admired Alan very much for what he was doing. He had all the odds against him, and still he worked so hard towards becoming a professional MMA fighter. We had driven out of the city. There was no light on the street other than what came from the motorbike. No other cars or people around us. It was dark, and there were no houses there. The warm air blew gently in my face. I was far, far away from home. But it felt nothing like that. I was completely relaxed and didn't think a second about being anywhere else. Alan put his hand out before making a left turn, and I asked him why he didn't use the indicator. He told me that in India no one uses the indicator, so if he turned it on, people would just think he was crazy and then ignore it. If it was invented in India, it would have been abandoned right away as a useless device, he explained while laughing. In the morning, Daniel had ordered a taxi for me to take me to the airport. It was a 4-hour drive and would cost me around $15. It was the best taxi deal I had gotten so far on the trip and probably in my life. When it arrived, the taxi driver was obviously disappointed to see me. He had expected a local guy, so he had charged local price. If he knew I was a tourist, it would have cost 10 times as much. There was trash all over the streets. People just threw it there, and eventually someone would gather it and set it on fire to get some heat. These were the filthiest streets I'd ever seen in my life. A woman was washing clothes outside her little house while 5 goats slept on the sidewalk next to her. A tiny barbershop was full, having 2 customers sitting in chairs getting haircuts. The hand-painted sign on the wall must have been 50 years old, and I could barely make out the word barber from the flakes of paint that desperately clung to it. A dead dog was lying in the middle of the street, and no one seemed to care. They just drove around it like nothing had happened. The taxi driver was just as reckless in his driving as everyone else, and I held onto the seatbelt with white knuckles every time he did one of his patented overtakes from hell. At least, if I survived the traffic in India, I could survive traffic anywhere in the world. I needed a break from the high-paced traveling and all the hustle and bustle of the big cities in India and Turkey. I had originally planned to go to Kuala Lumpur, but I just didn't have the energy for yet another crowded place. I had to get away for a few days and recharge my batteries before moving on. I looked at a few of my favorite backpacking sites to try and find a place to go near Kuala Lumpur. There was a small group of islands, only a short flight and boat ride away, that looked exotic and relaxing. I decided to ditch the big city, even though I had been looking forward to seeing the Petrona Towers, and spend a few days on the beach instead. It was the first time I strayed off my original travel plan and was more spontaneous. The feeling of freedom to go anywhere I wanted with a few days' notice was great. The Philippines, my last planned destination, was closing in, and I started to look forward to see what spontaneous decisions would come after that, and just how far I could go planning everything on the road.